classic Carlsberg.
I'm drinking remnants of bottles of wine because...
You drank all the wine on your holiday.
I did drink a lot of wine on my holiday.
I am watching the second round of the random German GT series that only runs on the old Nürburgring Nordschleife, the 23-kilometer bullshit insane racetrack that many people only existed for computer games and then discovered was actually a real thing.
That's pretty good. Oh, well, I can remember ages ago a rookie Formula One driver being asked about a track, and he's like, oh, you know, I played it a lot on Xbox.
Well, that was Jacques Villeneuve started that in the 90s, because when he came across from IndyCar, he was the first to... They didn't have simulators in those days, but he basically played things on Commodore Amiga and I think there might have been N64 around at that stage, but or PlayStation. But he learnt tracks on PlayStation before he went out to... So that was sort of the 1996 version. Now they've got these massive sort of G-loaded fucking...
Simulators
that they actually do their testing on, that they can save lots of... They don't actually have to run the cars on the track. They can test stuff and see what it would look like.
Oh, okay. Do they test drivers with that as well, or...?
They do put junior blokes in those things, but it seems like a very expensive way to kind of save money. You end up spending more money doing this than you would if you just ran a fucking car at a track on a Wednesday.
Is that like you know, I remember the AFL when I was into the AFL, and the Lions were like the first club that really got in on the off-field stuff. You know, like hyperbaric chambers and you know, multitudes of staff, you know, staff for everything. And it was, I think, at the end of their three-peat, and they, better AFL people than me will know this, but they capped the off-field spend. So they basically had a salary cap for off-field spending as well as on-field spending, because they were worried that, you know, the poorer clubs could basically afford a coach and an assistant coach and, you know, a guy to rub your groin, and that was about it.
And it's more expensive if you want a happy ending.
Yeah, that's right.
But, yeah, I mean, that operations budget stuff, I mean, that's one of the biggest problems with Formula One, is that they've got, you know, they've got, some teams have got payrolls of 600 people, which is preposterous. There's no way on earth they should have that, but that's what it's evolved to be. They've got 600 people and they've got budgets of $600 million. And they've always talked about, well, we should have a budget cap, but none of the big teams want to sign up for it. And as a result, you know, it'll be interesting to see whether the new management of Formula One decides that would be a good thing to impose, and then goes and imposes it. This is the Balls podcast, which is a podcast that we occasionally have between myself, Bezo, and him, Dr. Yobbo. Wait.
When large weather systems allow. Actually, I was a bit worried that you might get washed away by the same weather system, because I hear it's down your way now.
This is the thing where we assume all of New Zealand is the same place. That was about as far away from us as you are from Townsville.
Oh, okay, so it's just up the north.
It was the Bay of Plenty. So Bay of Plenty copped ex-tropical cyclone Debbie, and it flooded. I mean, it flooded an area that wasn't... It didn't look like there was even a levee for that river.
Yeah.
So I guess they just went. And I saw the local member for the Northern Rivers in New South Wales put out a pronouncement that he thinks that we should cancel all foreign aid, because obviously fixing people's carpets is more important than trying to save Syrian people. What a venal cunt. Anyway, yeah. National Party do, of course.
Even driving home today, the Northern Rivers is still under a fair chunk of water, to be honest.
But, you know, it'll drain, and it's a first world country, and people have got insurance, and they'll be all right.
Yep.
And the point of foreign aid is to look after people who are less fortunate than you, you fucking venal prick. Anyway.
So, unfortunately, I haven't had internet, and I don't know what hot takes you laid down in your epic monologue last week.
18 minutes, including the 1988 solo commercial intro.
I was...
You missed out thinking, so much.
I wonder if I could go back and find an 18-minute chunk of like, you know, of the Balls podcast where I don't say anything more than yes, yes, of course.
Well, I was
I don't think I've ever let you talk for 18 minutes before. Other than I went and had a piss, and you just had to keep filling dead air because it was sitting there.
It's tough to do that. And what I found was that I realized that really what I was doing was doing my least worst Roy Slaven impersonation, just sort of stitching ideas together and going, make of that what you will, you know. And Roy Slaven himself is an impersonation of all those fucking arrogant wanker shock jock. I mean, he's sort of a combination of insert sports commentator guy and Alan Jones. There's a lot of Alan Jones in Roy Slaven and in John Doyle's portrayal of Roy Slaven. And I found myself kind of mimicking some of that stuff. But but actually I was during the week I'm a little bit behind with our Kiwi podcast that gives us a shout occasionally, Drive Through Pod. I discovered I was about 4 weeks behind on that, so I crash listened to all their most recent episodes and discovered that they were trying something that we've pioneered, which is the Skype podcast, because they're separated by huge distances, the distance from the centre of Wellington to Upper Hutt. Go and look at that on a map, folks, if you're not familiar by how far these two gentlemen could not be asked getting together. But but they were doing, and they kept tripping over each other to start with, which I thought was beautiful because it's not me. It's fucking Skype. I don't interrupt people, damn it. I'm considerate, and if you've got a point of view, I'll listen to it. It's not me.
I've said before.
No, you should laugh at that because that's fucking laughable.
You know, one of my favorite sort of pop culture podcasts, he spends a lot of the time, like dropping the volume on those little bits where two people start to talk, and he basically picks the one where the person is talking and drops the little false start out of the thing in it. His sound amazing. And so I'm always amazed when he has like five people pods and it sounds like no one's talking over the top of each other. But that's because he spends fucking hours editing out all those ums and, oh, no, no, you go. No, no, you go. Sort of,
well, it's really hard without the visual. It's really hard without the visual cue because, I mean, obviously we do this without the pictures on Skype because of bandwidth. That's why we sound so tremendous, but
and that's why it drops out 15 times.
Exactly right. Even with that, it drops out like something I hadn't thought through. This metaphor, good for us. Good to have you back, man. And good, you got your holiday weekend in. Got your holiday weekend as well, even though it was presumably that the surf was a little bit brown and furry.
It was a little bit. There was quite a bit of ugly looking foam. But
so you got down the Tweed Coast.
Once our little island became part of the mainland again.
Yep. Yeah, I'm looking forward to that happening to Dunedin. Sea level rise it enacts its terrible toll on the low lying areas of South D, which will probably happen at some stage. This is not a podcast about geography. This is a podcast
or weather.
This is a podcast about the NBA, basically, because as I realised while I was thinking about rugby union this week, you and I are basically lapsed fans of most other football codes.
We've
been driven to basketball by the terribleness of rugby union, rugby league, and AFL.
The AFL thing for me is because I actually think there is. It's a little bit like cricket in that there is some really good AFL writing, less than cricket, but there is some. I find it really hard to find real in-depth rugby league writing. I don't think that that's a problem of the writers. I just don't think that the editors or the people that pay the journalists ask for it. I just don't think there's the, they seem to have a set of lines that they want to keep in. Rugby
I think as H.G. Nelson always put it, it's a simple game for simple people. It's as simple as buggery and twice as attractive. And it's not, the audience don't want to hear it, you know?
Well, but it's like, I had a big chat about at this with Sportress the other day, that there's a big
Sportress, which is a
I can never work out whether it is one person or multiple.
I think it's a small collective. But the lead tweeter for the Sportress is an avowed Canberra Raiders fan. Bleeds green, which is obviously a sign of hemochromatosis, and probably should be dealt with.
And Knicks fan, don't forget
that. Oh God, he's had a fun 20 years, hasn't he?
But definitely rugby union. Like rugby union has completely fallen. And I used to be a pretty dedicated viewer of what you could watch without pay TV. Anyway.
Yeah, we should and we should talk about this because the Sanzar, which has more A's in it than it used to, the South African, Australian, New Zealand, and Argentine, I think, rugby unions that coordinate the Super Rugby, are going to announce their plans for next year's competition tomorrow. By the time you hear this, it'll probably be today because we'll probably get this up on Sunday. Any kind of luck. And the likelihood appears to be, we're going to speculate recklessly here, that they're going to cut three teams, probably two South African teams and an Australian team, although it could be more than that. And we've argued a few times on here that one of the reasons Super Rugby is so awful to watch, particularly if any when it ever involves an Australian or a South African team, is that the talent base has been spread so thin. And in the South Africans' case, it's been diluted by players being able to leave South Africa and still be eligible for Springbok selection, that the quality is just incredibly poor. Whereas in New Zealand, they've been able to retain that player base because you can't get picked for the All Blacks unless you stay home. And that's been able to kind of put a bit of a tourniquet on the gaping, bleeding wound that is super-duper rugby.
Well, look at the NBA, right? Look at the example of Yogi Ferrell, who was, you know, essentially playing club rugby and got, you know, picked out for a, you know, 1 week trial with the Mavs.
Do you want to give the 30-second pricey of Yogi Ferrell?
Well, their development league, I guess you'd call it, their seconds. It's sort of like a cross between a development league and a seconds. I think the NBA is working towards it being a proper seconds where every team has a feeder team.
Yeah. But it's more like Jersey Flag than under 20, you know, youth cup in the rugby league. It's more like the VFA than the VFL.
Yeah, it's like the old school sort of second grade, isn't it? It's like where the guys that aren't good enough.
It is, but the gap's bigger.
Yes, much bigger because of their actual sort of sheer size of the NBA. Like they sort of scoop the talent, but the talent
it's not even like New South Wales or Queensland Cup compared to the NRL. It's kind of a step beyond that. It's like bush footy. It's like fucking Group 18.
Like, but despite that being the case, there is still three or four or even more guys like that every year that come into the NBA, get a start with the right coach or the right team, and go on to have a semi-reasonable NBA career. If a key player in a Super Rugby side goes down in Australia, then that side's fucked.
Yeah.
Really.
Because the gap is so much bigger between Super Rugby. And this was regular listener John Alexander pointed this out.
Yeah.
We asked him for his thoughts, and he wrote us a long and well-argued and largely co-signed by me screed about, you know, if you are going to drop a team, which ones are going to be and why should you drop it and whether you should drop any at all, when the problem all comes down to sort of cancerous management, if you like, just the fact that none of the state unions could organise their way out of a wet sack of shite.
And that's the thing, like, when Queensland had their success under Link, what's that, 7 years ago now?
This is Ewan McKenzie, former, who'd previously been the New South Wales coach.
Yeah.
And one with them, and one with Queensland, and conspicuously failed to win with Australia.
Well, they tried to do a succession plan, and it's not only the talent in the players, it seems to be the talent in the coaching. Now, the problem is with the coaching is that there's a lot of really good jobs overseas. You know, it's a lot, the professional, as far as Australian coaches are concerned, the professional league is the Heineken Cup in the UK. That seems to be where a lot of them go and earn their living. It doesn't seem like there's a whole heap of those guys happy to kick around as the assistant coach or the specialist coach in Australia.
Yeah, there's certainly more money in Europe. Although, ironically, the reason that Super Rugby actually expanded to 18 teams was because of the large swathe of money they got from Northern Hemisphere television. That was where the big bump in money came from, was from the Northern Hemisphere TV rights. And that's what drove the move to 18 teams and presumably the introduction of the teams that were in different time zones. Because obviously, for Europe, the best games are the games that are in the South African and Argentine time zone, because that's much more closer to their business hours, if you like, than the Australian New Zealand games.
But I ultimately think the problem with rugby is, and cricket has the same problem in the UK, is that they were a sport that needed funding. Pay Television came along and offered them a big chunk of money, and their ultimate goal should have been to get back to free-to-air, because if you want to be a sustainable sport in a very competitive marketplace, you need some way, and you and I definitely agree that way might not necessarily be terrestrial television in the long run, but for now, that's
certainly
the easiest way
term,
it's the easiest way to get out to the most eyeballs, and I think they've just withered on the vine. Because
you see that with the A-League, because the A-League have started putting games on SBS every night, every week. The Formula One and V8 Supercars have had that situation where they've moved more towards a pay TV, but they need to retain that footprint in terrestrial television because that's where the eyeballs are. That's where the sponsors get their quid pro quo. Look, you can't do it that other way. But I mean, they're probably going to announce one of the Australian teams goes. So the Australian teams, for those who aren't familiar, there's a New South Wales team and a Queensland team. And they'll obviously stay because those are the two home unions, if you like, for rugby union. They're the hotbeds of the teams of the code. There's the ACT Brumbies, who are a foundation member of the Herald Super 12. There's the Melbourne Rebels, and there's the Western Force. Now, each of those teams, I'm sure you'd agree, and as John pointed out in his screed to us, each of them has flaws. Each of them has reasons you'd kick them out, and each of them has reasons you'd hang on to them. Even the Western Force, who are probably in the most economically perilous state, actually have a reasonably good junior development pathway, probably because it's unsullied by the link to the GPS private schools and the old boys networks that you see in New South Wales and Queensland.
And the funny thing is the reverse of what happens. Once upon a time, there was a brief period where rugby union sort of stole. Well, Quade's a good example, you know. Even though he went to a private school, he's not your sort of typical private school kid.
Well, he was a Kiwi kid,
and
in New Zealand, just like in the country, in country New South Wales, just as much as in New Zealand, the class differentiation that, you know, if you went to go to a private school, you play rugby union. If you're a busted ass fucking public school hick, you play rugby league. That's not as prevalent, although it is a little bit prevalent in the country. It's much more prevalent in the city. But it's rugby union. I mean, where I grew up in the country, the same dudes played on the union side as played on the rugby league side. It was literally the same dudes rocking out, turning up to play.
Yeah, well, same in Gladstone. Like, I remember my mate Tony Martin, who ended up playing for the Storm, went and played.
That's not the skinny comedian with glasses.
No, no,
and it's
no,
not
that's
the
right.
guy who played the priest on Home and Away or East Street or whatever it was.
But he went and played like for Sikh.
And it's not the German time trialer. So there's three German Tony Martins.
Or Gladstone, I can't remember, but he went to a regional rep carnival, got picked for Queensland Schoolboys as a rugby league guy, and sort of went, nah, I don't really feel like going. Got picked at 5'8", you know, against obviously what would have been a strong GPS contingent down in Brisbane, and just sort of shrugged his shoulders and went, oh, no, I just played for Gladstone for a bit of fun. And that seemed to be the attitude. You know, the rugby league guys had no problems going and dabbling in a bit of rugby union, but they never really took it that seriously.
Well, my understanding from mates who played both codes was that union was more fun to play.
Okay.
League was is obviously a, it's a better television product, but union was actually more fun to play because of the probably because of the rules. I think these friends were people who were large, so they enjoyed the ruck contest. Whereas I'm sure as a rugby league would be a more fun game to play as a back. I would have thought.
No, not unless you're an inside back. I played a. Couple of I didn't play much of either because being
skinny blind
until I got contact lenses it was a bit hard because I couldn't really see the fucking ball and
well,
they weren't
playing rugby union you won't need to worry because you won't ever see the fucking thing
and you know playing with glasses in a contact sport is not really seen as a positive thing to do but I played in year 12 I played in a carnival up in CQ and I got picked on the wing and a couple of their second rowers were pretty shit. And the coaches after the first game went, look, does anyone want to volunteer to play second row? And I'm like, do I get to touch the ball? Cause I literally sat on the field for a whole fucking game on the wing and didn't touch a player, didn't touch the ball. 80 minutes just standing around. It's like, well, this is something, I guess. And I had no idea what I was doing, but at least I got to fucking touch the ball and have some physical contact and actually do something, even though I was very bad at it.
You just wanted to instill some violence in some people.
Yeah, pretty much. Well, after I can understand how Ben Tune felt. Anyway, I always sympathise with him when I went to when I was a Reds member. I used to sit there and go, "Fuck, man, I know what you have to do this every week. Just sit out there while the center switches back into the ruck and fucking jams it back down the middle.
At least get him a blankie and a deck chair so he's got something
to
do. But that's the problem. It's the problem about Australian and South African rugby union is that it's a hard game to watch because of the style of play. It's very forward dominated. It's very pick and drive. It's very scrum penalty. It's not fun to watch. And even the New Zealand game isn't as much fun. I mean, we're both lapsed rugby union fans. I was never that much of that keen on the code, but I kind of adopted it when I moved to New Zealand because it's, you know, when in Rome sort of thing. And it was kind of nice having a local team to support. I mean, I'd lived in Brisbane before that and had grown up hating the Broncos, so I was never going to adopt them. Before that, I'd lived in Sydney where there's 47 different football clubs you can adopt. But I'd moved to a small regional one-team city and it was kind of nice being on the side of that and going to the games and cheering them on. And they were a bit crap, but they were all right and they were trying really hard. And of course, they won a few years ago and that was really cool. But I follow the Highlanders now, but I'd never watch them play because rugby union is fucking awful to watch.
It's a little bit like me with the Phoenix Suns. They're my side, but I don't watch them play that.
No, but at least you watch the code. I don't even watch the fucking code.
Well, the thing, and I've told this story on the podcast before, but when I was really into my rugby, I used to sit up and watch the Six Nations. And I remember watching...
Now, that's some serious 10-man rugby.
Yes. But I watched one night, I watched Ireland, France. I can't remember who it was. But I watched this game and it was fucking amazing. Like, spread the ball to the wings, kick, chase, fucking, you know, rolling mauls. Like, everything that's great about rugby was in this game. It was just a fucking cracking game. 80 minutes of fucking balls to the wall. Like, no reset scrums, none of that bullshit. Just bang. And
clearly
not just
England
all...
weren't playing.
Well, I'll get to that. So
here I go stepping on your punchlines.
Good forward play and everything as well. It wasn't just like, you know, like Fiji where they just roll it out through the backs every single time and just throw it around. This was like it was a perfect advertisement for rugby. And I was so hyped. You know, this is like 1 a.m. I was like, fuck, man, rugby is just so much better than rugby league. I can't believe, how is this? I was literally sitting there going, how is this sport not dominating? How the fuck is this not just killing rugby league? next game. So they had a doubleheader. England, Scotland. And I lasted 30 minutes before I fell asleep. Like, I literally 30 minutes in, it fucking bored me so much, I fell asleep. And I was like, well, okay, well, that's why. And that's what I've always thought about rugby. The ceiling is so much higher than rugby league, but the fucking floor is so much lower. Like, it's really hard to have a game of rugby league as boring as a bad game of rugby.
The ceiling is not the roof.
No, definitely not.
That's why Michael Jordan doesn't play it. So, which Australian franchise would you chuck in the bin?
Oh, fuck Melbourne off. What do you need Melbourne for?
It's strategically important. It's the biggest city that they don't have the team in.
Yeah, do they, like, is there a junior base? Is there good sponsorship money? Like,
I think they've got good corporate support.
Yeah.
I reckon you've got a valid concern with whether they have junior, you know, any kind of pathway. I don't know how they're going with trying to get it into the grammar schools or anything like that. But this is the problem. Each one of the franchises has, other than New South Wales and Queensland, which we're stuck with. I mean, even though the boards are massively fucked, that's where you can't cut the trunk off. We have to prune some branches here. But yeah, I mean, Melbourne would seem like one you'd pinch, but Western Force are in worse financial state, and then you've got the ACT Brumbies, who were a foundation member of the Super 12, won a bunch of comps, but struggled to fill their ground, are economically problematic, governance problematic, and it might be the Brumbies that get the ass.
Mm. See, I've got problems when you're cutting your possibly historically best club.
Yeah. Well, like, not possibly, literally. I mean, the Brumbies have won more comps than New South Wales and Queensland have.
But not even in terms of Super Rugby, but in terms of producing Wallabies like Larkham, Gregan. Like, there's a whole host of great Australian players that came from the Brumbies.
But interesting, they came in that era, in that Super 12 era, they came from the Brumbies because they were the rejects from New South Wales and Queensland. They were the dudes who the old boys networks and the brown nosing that is rife in the New South Wales and Queensland rugby unions had pushed away and rejected. And so these guys, the ACT, the success of the ACT Brumbies is a statement of how dysfunctional Australian rugby union is and has been for the past 20 years.
This is probably where private ownership of clubs might help. Because if you were the Western Force and you had nothing to do with the ARU and the Old Boys Network, and you were essentially run by expat South Africans, that might shake it up. I can't see how. I think the system is so entrenched in rugby that it's never going to change.
Yeah.
You look at the coaching choices, and this is the other thing, going back to that thing about you know, the good coaches going overseas. The guys that go overseas and coach are not the big name ex players. The guys that are the big name ex players that are firmly entrenched in the old boy network, they're the ones that stay and coach in Australia.
Or they get their own fucking newspaper column in Fairfax. Peter Fitzsimons is emblematic of everything that's wrong with rugby union in this in your country, in any country. Because his code is a failing dog sniffing its own ass, a robberous. And he just pumps out columns about how fucked rugby league and soccer are. It's just amazingly.
To be fair, though, like, I used to watch Offsiders, which was a great show and has sort of, I haven't watched it for a while because it just evolved.
That's not Mark Latham's show, is it?
No, this is, that's Outsiders, I think.
So Offsiders was kind of a parody of Outsiders.
Yeah, well, they had Insiders, which was the political show, and then they had Offsiders, which was the sports show. And it used to be genuinely good, and they talked, but it ended up devolving into this Roy Masters, Caroline Wilson shtick about our code is better than your code. And it's like, who gives a fuck? Like, seriously.
I don't want to hear from either of those people.
in 20 years, more kids are going to be watching the NBA and fucking soccer, like English Premier League or Champions League, than either of your fucking codes.
And twice as many kids are going to be playing watching esports than any of this stuff. So what's the fucking point?
Yeah. That's possible. That is entirely possible. Shall we move on to something that both of us enjoy a little bit more, which is the NBA?
Now I want to kill one of these teams. So you're going to kill Melbourne. I don't mind the idea of killing Melbourne because they were the last in, so first out.
Well, let's be honest. You want to kill the Reds and I want to kill the Waratahs.
No, I think that if you kill that, I want to kill rugby union as a thing because it's a terrible sport played by terrible people. But that's just because that's just how that is.
But this is why I think you should go. This is why I would like to see private ownership and someone come in and who owns the Rebels and go, I'm just not interested in anyone that's played for a GPS school. I'm just going to go and raid Keebra Park. I'm just going to say to every 17-year-old at Keebra Park, I'm going to pay you stupid amounts of money to come and play, and I'll get the next Larkham or the next Wally Lewis or the, you know, I'll
you know
just
what's
unearth-
been the biggest problem, with the biggest change, the biggest difference maker there? The last couple of rugby league TV deals have been much more. The most busted ass rugby league club and the advent of the under 20s comp, I reckon that has shored up their development pathway much more, because that means you've got these kids under contract from much earlier in a system that's actually pinned down. So it actually becomes more difficult for, I mean, you still hear about
you would
other
basically
codes
have
poaching,
to,
but it doesn't happen anywhere near as much as it used to.
No, you would have to Brooklyn Nets it. You would have to just fucking go, we are going to pay over and above, but what we're going to do is we're not going to raid the talent pool. We're not going to go and dip in the talent pool that's there already. You would have to go to the ARU and say, look, we're going to bring a $1 billion checkbook, but you have to let us spend. I don't know if they have a salary cap. I assume that they do. But you're going to have
do.
To let
I
us.
I don't think they do have a salary
well,
cap.
Even better, find someone that's just in love with rugby that has shitloads of money and just go and raid rugby league, go and raid Fijian junior rugby, do whatever you have to fucking do to steal a whole bunch of people outside the Australian talent pool. And that's the only way you're going to change it up and make a difference.
Yeah, but that's not sustainable. You need to build sustainable
development systems.
And I think that's kind of the annoying thing about if it's the Western Force who go because they're economically unsound, it sounds like they've actually done a better job than a lot of the other small. I mean, you can set the ACT aside because they effectively are a proxy for all of southern New South Wales. So they kind of get the Riverina and all that shit. And there's lots of good rugby unions being played there. But I feel like they've kind of done a job. It's not a great. Although I did hear this, and I'm not sure if this is still true, but the Western Force were looking at kind of a fan buy-in ownership model. A little bit Green Bay Packers, exactly. Yeah, that kind of unionized. And a lot of German football teams are owned like that. They're owned as fan collectives. In fact, they're all supposed to be owned as fan collectives, which is part of the reason why the Red Bull team is so hated, because they've kind of gone against the spirit of the law, if not the letter of the law. Anyway, so, I reckon you're probably right. I reckon Melbourne, even though Melbourne's of strategic interest, the NRL's example with Melbourne, in that they had to keep propping it up for 15, 20 years, even though it was a successful team on the pitch, it still wasn't paying its way, and they still had to prop it up. And this is not a place where we're going to put in two sets of books jokes, but they still had to prop it up economically to keep it going, even though it was successful. It tends to indicate that, you know, just because it's the biggest market doesn't mean it's actually an easy market to penetrate.
Well, here's another little data point from two completely different sources. One was Dan Bredick's article on the new CBA that the cricketers are trying to thrash out. And one of the things that Cricket Australia wants to do is basically quadruple their development budget. You know, they want to hire 300 or 400 more people in development roles all over Australia. So the war is being fought at sort of age six and up.
Which is fair enough, because the AFL has been bringing the biggest knife to the knife fight in the last little while. And that's always been the call in say, Western Sydney, that they're all terrified of AFL because AFL have got the most resource to pump into player development and getting into schools and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. And then I was listening to Steve Nash on Simonson's podcast the other day, and he was talking about his daughters and
Steve
and
Nash, the Canadian basketballer who never won anything.
Yes, I guess that's technically true.
He won an MVP.
He was talking about his daughters and his daughters' experience.
Was he the best player in the league, or did he have the best season?
We'll get to that. Just hold that thought. Let me. Don't step on our later content, even though we're half an hour already.
Oh fuck! That argument has been litigated and relitigated 473 times in the last few months.
It's a bit fucking stupid. Yeah. But he was talking about, like, when he was the same age as what his daughters are now, he was essentially playing three or four sports, mainly soccer and basketball. But he was playing, you know, he was dipping his toe into a lot of different sports. And he said, now the way that sport is set up in America is, at that age, they want them to specialize. They essentially want them playing one sport all year round and going to training camps and developing different skills and stuff like that. And it's really hard for them to be multi-sport kids.
So instead of playing cricket in the summer and a footy code in the winter, they're playing a footy code in the winter and they're going to footy camp. Yeah. In the summer,
or they're, you know, playing cricket in the summer and then going on a tour to, you know, get the parents to pay $1,000 to send them to Sri Lanka for a month and play a junior tour of Sri Lanka. But keep all the money that a parent is spending on sport in that sport. You pick the sport for your kid, and that's the only, you basically are funding the AFL or cricket or basketball or hockey or soccer or whatever it is for the whole of that kid's sporting life. And
we should say that we're talking about dudes here mostly, though, because we're still, girls sport isn't anywhere near to the same degree as compartmentalized. We still see dual internationals and tri internationals.
Maybe in Australia, but this is what both of them were saying, because they both got daughters. They were sort of saying that you would expect women's sport to still have that, look, go out and just fucking play whatever you like. But Nash was saying, I think his daughter is into volleyball, and they're pushing all the time, like, why are you playing another sport when we're not playing? Why aren't you going to training camps or doing this or doing that? And he's sort of like, well, you know, he's worried that they're not developing spatial and different skills, like, you know, obviously
that's fucking dumb, isn't it? That's, I mean, you know, as a coach, you know that athletes who have got a rounded skill base, who have got experience in a versatile rounded skill base, are going to be better than ones that have just been operating down a very narrow path that's been dictated by somebody's fucking coaching portfolio or syllabus or whatever else.
Yeah, absolutely. Which is why
I don't mean to use trigger
do.
Words. I hope you don't feel triggered.
We try and do cross-training sort of stuff even in our training. Like touch is a bit of a weird one because it is a sport that doesn't stop. Like, touch players tend to play
eventually stops when the police get involved.
All year round, simply because it's not a sport that has evolved into a... Like, we don't have a professional level, so it's not... You can't really get to a level where... you're sort of all tunneled into, you know, an actual season. There's so many different places you can play at a high level, if that makes sense. But should we talk about
never so high that you're going to make a living? I think just to finish up on rugby union, it's pretty sure it's just going to be the sport that ruins pitches for the A-League, because at the moment that's about all it is from a national perspective. Should we talk about
Just quickly, you would have to say it's the fourth sport in Australia, yeah? rugby league, AFL, cricket. Oh, no, fifth, sorry. The A-League's past rugby union.
Well, it depends what you rate it by. If it's ratings, if it's... Well, the thing is that rugby union punches above its weight. It's got a small has a small participant base, has a small ratings base, but it has a high corporate support base because of the socio-economic demographic that the people who support rugby union come from. But, you know, you saw those appalling Roy Morgan participation figures, which the AAU have disputed, but let's say they're valid. they're appalling.
Where there's smoke, there's fire.
Yeah. I think it's pretty clear that they're on struggle street. They're not going to fix the problem just by as a correspondent said. Axing a team isn't going to fix the problem that the governance of the sport is completely fucked and so far up its own arse it can see its own tonsils.
Yep.
A sport that isn't quite as far up its own arse. The National Basketball Association. Now that the Shamacher kid stuff is out the way, the NBA season is getting serious. There's only a couple of games left.
Thank
for
fuck
each,
for that,
each
that,
team.
That was over. Are we set in the West?
I feel like the playoff lineups. I feel like the. I'm just leaning across to get my computer because it's got the light up on it.
I sort of thought Portland had lockdown 8, but I'm not entirely.
Portland were in a little bit of trouble the other day against Minnesota, but they did manage to pull out a win, and that made a large difference.
There
are four game clear, but all the rest of their games are at home, I think. Problem is that those games include the Spurs, but the Spurs might not give a fuck. I mean, the Spurs almost lost to the Mavs today, and they've lost to the Lakers the other day, so there's quite a lot of can't be fucked going on there. But yeah, the eight in the West looks pretty much set. The bracket looks pretty much set. It looks like Dubs versus Blazers, or possibly Denver. Spurs versus Memphis, which will just be
Zombie Grizz.
Massive amounts of violence. Rockets and the Thunder, which would be fun, and the Jazz v the Clippers.
The NBA should absolutely totally change their schedule and hold the MVP press conference 5 seconds before the tip off of that OKC Houston Rockets series, because
and give the MVP to Kawhi.
Kawhi, that's right.
Just to fuck and then, off James and Russ.
To watch both of them absolutely go ballistic. But that's so unfair. I think it's after game 3 or something of that series that the MVP gets named, and that's so crappy because either one of them not getting it would just so add an edge to that series. I don't think OKC have got fuck all chance. I think they'll go out. And
no,
fight,
they don't.
But,
they don't match up well with the Rockets for whatever reason. They match up better with other teams. They just don't match up well with the Rockets.
Well, that's pretty easy though. Like the Rockets have a really really good defensive guard, and OKC's offense comes through one guy. So.
And the Rockets have pretty good bigs, which means that the Cantor Adams double act isn't as much of an advantage as it is against other teams.
To be fair though, their coach last year pulled out some tricks that he hadn't shown all regular season in the finals.
That's true. He did do that walking like Kaiser Soze thing.
Yeah. So let's see whether that's a. You know, if he does that again and they beat or come close to beating the Rockets, then, you know, there might be a good deep dive on why he sort of plays possum a little bit in the regular season with some of his
tactics. I kind of felt a little bit that the Spurs have been doing that while they've been picking their spots late in the season. I mean, there was that game between the Spurs and the Warriors, which you know, would, you know, if you squinted, would have been a competition for the number one seed. But the Spurs already said, look, we're not that interested. Spurs rushed out to a 20-point lead in the first quarter and a half and then just sort of conceded, which was really odd. Unless you sort of think, you know, maybe they're picking their spots and within games and saying, all right, we'll try this. We'll see if it works. Oh, that's worked. Oh, cool. Let's just
put it away.
We'll just put that away and think about it for later. So, I mean, they figured out something that just beat the shit out of the Dubs starters in a game the Dubs were trying to win. So that's an important thing to file away, I guess.
Well, like quite a few people have written about how because the Dubs played their small ball lineups more last year because they were trying to win every game, it gave all those analytic departments and all those, you know, scouts so much more data to work with.
Shitloads more data.
So when it came to finals, you know, just those little bits on the edges can really matter.
For sure.
And
the Spurs have been picking their spots in that they chose to lose a game to the Lakers just as a troll, which I thought was brilliant. They're like, we're comfortably in the second seed. We can afford to throw a game to the Lakers just to ruin their chances of getting a high seed. And I'd respect that. I'd just totally respect the game. That is awesome. That is long-term hate, and I love it. That is petty as fuck.
The stupid thing about this, you know, DMP rest issue is, like, you know, they're on these good teams for resting players when they're trying to win a championship. But no one's complaining about the Lakers basically playing the last five guys on the end of their bench in some games trying to lose.
Well, it's a tanking thing, and that also sucks. I mean, the whole thing is fucked.
Yeah. But they're not really
putting the Lakers on national television at this time of year for good reason. They put the Lakers on national television a lot, but not so much at this time of year. I mean, the biggest problem, it's the old argument between sport and entertainment. What's this for? It's a sport, but if it wasn't entertainment, nobody would be getting paid $20 million a year. It's because it's entertainment.
I think they've already really solved the DMP rest. All the clubs have basically said, look, where we can, you guys go and work it out so that we don't have to play back-to-backs on national TV games.
Yes.
And we won't rest players on national TV games unless they absolutely need rest. So we'll try
that was the thing with the Cavs, because Love and Kyrie were coming back from injuries. They were on as we said previous weeks, they're actually on a rota. They were coming back. So that was a tough one. But as you say, they just have to, the idea that they had games scheduled the day before a nationally televised game, what the fuck did you expect to happen? Even if you were always going to get an inferior product doing that. It's their own, it's the NBA's own damn fucking fault, really, in that respect.
Well, and you're seeing a little change already where the Spurs rested all their players for today's game, which wasn't a national TV game, and they'll play all those guys
against the Clippers.
Against the Clippers.
Yeah.
I reckon the Clippers are one of the most interesting subplots of the postseason, because if they crash and burn, is there going to be anyone that wants to come back there? I guess Chris Paul, because he's got so many business interests
and Chris Paul's on for that mega, mega, mega deal. He's on for the deal that he got written in as the president of
the CBA.
Called the
Chris. We would like to call this clause the Chris Paul wants to get fucking paid clause.
No, the robbing Peter to pay Chris Paul clause. I don't know who Peter is, but he's fucked.
But I reckon JJ Redick is gone. I reckon he's just had enough of the bullshit. And I would not be surprised.
And he was never a Clips lifer. I mean, he joined relatively recently. He came from the Magic and so forth.
So, you know, we could just see a million DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul pick and rolls, which is probably enough to get you 7th or 8th in the West, but it'll drop them back down into that good but not great sort of area that the Grizzlies and Portland and those teams sort of, you know, sit year after year but can never sort of push up into the top four but never fall too low to get a really good draft pick to reload.
Look, I think it's pretty clear they need to retool all their parts that aren't the big three. If they are going to retain that big three, they need a different cast around that because the current cast didn't work. And it could be that that big three just does not work together.
I mean, or a new coach, or
it's only good enough, or a new general manager.
Yeah,
I mean the coach is fine. The general manager, the one who's picking the players, less so, and that's the problem.
I think if there's a new general manager, the new general manager is not going to want the coach that was the general manager.
I think Doc's a good coach. I think that, but the problem is, I think a lot of his problems are to do with the quality of cattle that the general manager, who was also Doc, for those who missed that subtlety, has arranged around it. And let's face it, which of the coach as general manager deals is working out right now? The Pistons are 10th.
Yeah.
And are going to miss the playoffs. The Hawks have free fallen to 5th.
I think they could be lower than that.
No, right now they're 5th. I have checked.
They're 5th. They're only a game ahead of the scrum.
They
could finish 8th if they have a bit of a free fall. Though they rested their starters and still beat Cleveland today. So
yes, because
what the fuck?
Cleveland were comfortable because that was interesting with Cleveland because of course LeBron did the old okie doke, the double bluff, the complete psych out, which is to say, I don't give a fuck about the regular season, and then tried his ass off in the regular season game against the Celtics, single-handedly beat them into pulp, and then just quietly wandered off and said, yeah, how about that then? So that kind of reminded you that the Celts don't really have a second gear, but it was also a reminder that LeBron's got a second gear and a third and a fourth and a fifth gear. But that was the decision. Because while we were away, folks, the Boston actually took the number one seed off Cleveland and then have just given it back. So now we're exactly back where we started from.
It'd be really interesting to see LeBron in a one-game final series like rugby league or AFL where you just beat a different opponent and you don't have that seven-game thing to work out another team and work out its weaknesses.
He would be amazing.
He can just turn it on.
He'd be like Jonathan Thurston. You just put a team on his back and he'd just fucking carry him.
That's right. And if he got hot in a final series, like if you know playing a different opponent every week, there might just be nothing you could do.
So does that not make him the most valuable player of the NBA for 2016-17? Back to that problem, which we're never going to solve, which is that most valuable player. The problem is that the key word is value and nobody's defined what value is.
My problem is the MVP is still an offense. Like all the arguments you see on Twitter,
it's still offensively biased. It's kind of to what extent
80-20?
Well, it's to what extent do you factor in defense? And obviously the Kawhi stands are factoring it in more than the Russ stands. But
the thing is, it's really easy to define offense, you know, like even if you factor in things like hockey assists and stuff like that, obviously Harden.
Pass that goes before the pass that leads to the score, folks, in case you're wondering.
Yeah. And especially it's probably more valid in today's NBA where, you know, defenses load up on the strong side and the only way to get around it is more than one pass. So
there are more passes per bucket these days than there have been at any stage in NBA basketball.
You get a lot more of the pass that defines the play goes to a guy. That guy gets closed out on by the help defender who you then pass it to someone who is extremely open, which is ideally the bucket that you want in today's NBA.
You want any bucket, but you want a bucket that's of high probability.
Like, I wondered, and this is the thing where it'd be really fascinating to have access to that sport UV data and be a journalist. Like, I can just see how guys like Zach Lowe have come to be a force in NBA journalism. Because I was wondering about how many times does a pass to the player that Kawhi Leonard is defending, how many times is that a bad pass because they're overcompensating because they're worried about getting the ball stolen?
Well, how many times pass not happen because Kawhi Leonard's marking them? And that stuff you'll never be able to pull out the data. Unless you do it by omission, the fact that they haven't passed it to the guy who Kawhi was marking. And how much?
Yeah, that's right. Yes. So look at how many times Kawhi's guy, like, you know, if he's marking James Harden, how many times does James Harden get past the ball in a normal game, and how many times does he get past the ball in a game where Kawhi's defending him? Like, that stuff would be really, it's really, really hard to define. And
he never gets past the ball because he's always got the ball, because he's...
Yeah, well, Harden's probably a bad example, but, you know, but that's the stuff that's a lot harder to tease out. And if you're a hot take Skip Bayless style voter, then you've got no interest in looking at that sort of stuff. You're like, you know, triple double, Westbrook's your man.
Whenever they show the top 10 highlights on NBA action, it's not people blocking. It's not fantastic pressing. It's not screens. It's people scoring points, which is kind of the point of the sport. And I don't mind so much that I'm trying to say that with a sensible Antipodean accent, but you can't. Whenever you're talking about American sport, you have to talk about offense and defense. I don't mind that offense is more important than defense in basketball, because I don't tune in to watch defense. I tune in to watch offense. That's just, you know, I watch soccer. I watch football to see goals. I don't want to see nil all, which is a fantastic example of defense. I think that's probably fairly common amongst fans. So I don't mind the idea. I mean, that offense is more important than defense in terms of assessing who's the most valuable player, but it's got some value.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, I see all these discussions about how, you know, they're basically comparing Kawhi to Harden and Westbrook as an offensive player, and I'm like, yeah, that's fine, but the dude's the best defender. Like, and the same with LeBron.
Yeah, but the numbers actually show that he isn't.
That's been debunked.
Well,
though.
It hasn't been debunked. It's just been talked around.
No,
people have come up with arguments. It's not been. The stats say what the stats say. People have said, "Oh, I think it's because of this, or I think it's an artifact, or it's because of that." But the numbers are what they are.
Yeah, no, I'm not as convinced with that take as a bit.
Because you don't want to believe it. Because everyone finds the argument that has an argument and finds numbers to support it. And that's the basis of any MVP take. If you think a triple-double is an important thing, you're going to vote for Russ. If you don't, if you think it's a series of arbitrary numbers, you vote for Harden. If you think that those guys don't defend enough, you vote for Kawhi. If you think it should go to Michael Jordan, you'll vote for LeBron James. You think it should go to the best player, the guy who would win. You know, is the difference between winning and losing each year? You'll go to LeBron James. It's a stupid argument, and it fills in weeks where there's nothing else happening.
The funny thing is, like, LeBron can sleepwalk him through a pretty good offensive game, but the games where the Cavs look awesome are the games where LeBron turns up and decides that he's just going to be this absolutely defensive weapon. And he sort of makes up for a lot of the flaws in the Cavs side when he decides to be that. Like, he's one of the top sort of three or four defenders in the league. He just doesn't do it that often.
Well, I think it's more that he can't do it that often.
Yeah, probably.
You can't do that 82 times and then...
When you're averaging
another
39 minutes.
No, you can't.
39 minutes a game, you can't.
I'm never gonna crucify LeBron for picking his spots, because...
No,
he needs to pick his spots more than anybody. So much of it lies sort of rides on him. So
I still think he's I think both him and Kawhi, but him particularly, is a little bit being left behind because of his he's one of the greatest two-way players in the game. And his pure stats are just as impressive as those other two guys.
But I think the problem is that he takes off too many. As you say, he takes off too many games. But, I mean, they're the number one in the East. I mean, and it looks like the East is nowhere near as settled as the West, because there's an absolute scrum. I mean, 3 and 4 are a coin flip. In fact, there isn't that much difference between 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then there's an absolute scrum from 5th down to 9th. So that's still up in the air. But we could have a Cavs-Bulls first round series, which given the Bulls have pretty much owned the Cavs this year, could actually be quite fun. I mean, admittedly, it would require the series to be on TNT for the Bulls to win, but...
Well, the one that I find interesting is, who would you be throwing at the last game somehow to avoid the Bucks? Because even though the Bucks are in sixth, they've beaten a lot of good teams lately.
I wouldn't be that worried about the Bucks, to be perfectly honest.
You think they're sort of performing at their peak and that those other teams will step it up and they just won't be good enough yet?
Well, the Bucks played the Thunder earlier in the week, and I kind of feel they're the same sort of game, the same sort of team. They can be amazing, but they can also be fucking ordinary. And they're fairly brittle in that I think if things can go badly for them fairly easily. So I don't really feel like there's a lot of, you know, if you smack him in the mouth, I don't really feel like there's a lot of substance there. So, yep. I mean, currently they're lined up to play the three, which is probably, it's either going to be Toronto or Washington, depending on how that goes. And I think, I wouldn't be terribly concerned by the Bucks. I mean, the thing is, the Bulls are currently playing, the Bulls are currently one of the hottest teams in the East. because Dwayne Wade is out, which I think,
and Rondo's averaging out. Like 39% from the field in the last month or some ridiculous amount.
He's having a Ricky Rubio of a time, but yeah, it's the Raptors have gone super hot with Kyle Lowry out. It's slightly ridiculous, and all these teams are going to have to find ways to reintegrate these superstars because they're going to have to, and then probably not going to play as well.
Yeah. I think the Raptors are the ones that wouldn't want to face the Bucks. The Raptors want a nice, easy first round because they are a team that has legitimate first round jitters. I think they're better in the second round if they can get there. But
I don't think they're taking the three off. I don't think they're taking the two off Boston. I think they might be pinned in there. But who knows what happens in the last couple of games?
Mm.
Basketball, eh? It's a game.
Yeah, like the postseason, there's going to be a lot of shade thrown. Like, you know, there's probably three legitimate defensive player of the year candidates. You know, Kawhi, just because he's won it twice, will get votes. Draymond's having an awesome year. Gobert's having an awesome year.
But legit, nobody cares about defensive player of the year.
I care about defensive player of the year.
But nobody cares about defensive player of the year.
Oh, dear.
But that's the NBA.
I was going to talk about
defensive
coach
player
of the year
from years past. It wasn't Dennis Rodman. Dwight Howard.
No. I'm thinking of... there was the guy that I loved in the Pistons.
Yeah, that guy.
Fuck, what's his name?
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, that guy.
Well, Duncan won it a couple of times. I think Kobe win it 1 year, Defensive Player of the Year. You know, he made all first team defensive NBA, didn't he? Same as Jordan. Jordan won Defensive Player of the Year a couple of times.
I think he won it once because he was trying to prove a point.
Mm.
Which proves that anybody can win it if they put their mind to it.
Sure.
I don't mean to be offensive about it, but nobody gives a fuck about defense.
Very good. Hey, did you have any other motorsport or football hot takes?
No, I'll leave those aside. I just want to tell you about a fellow called David King who works for SEN Radio, I think, in Melbourne. And he made a statement that I thought was really quite interesting. His statement was that, in his view... Essendon Football Club had almost become, through adversity, everyone's second favourite team.
It's one of the most ridiculous hot takes I've ever heard.
But the thing is that it wasn't expressed in the view of a hot take. He was expressing this as though it was understood fact. Wisdom. And I think that this underpins a greater point with the sports media in that they live in a fucking bubble. and have no grasp on reality. I think if you are, I have never, I mean, there are sports codes where this is the case, but I've never heard of a sports media, or certainly a sports media member, so out of touch with what the punters think than this guy. Can you think of any example of any sport where the media have got such a poor grasp on reality?
No, absolutely not.
I mean, rugby league, people seem to have a grasp, but, you know, cricket, union, probably less because they're all weird, but it's just unfathomable. Through adversity caused by injecting your players with weird shit and getting caught for it.
Mm. Yep. Yeah, that's... No.
Fuck Essendon. Fuck. You know, Essendon were probably my second favourite team before that. Or third or fourth, something like that. I liked the Bombers when I was a kid because they were called the Bombers. I thought that was a cool name. And they played in red and black. I thought that was cool colours. I thought that was great when in the 80s when I was a kid. I'd like the entire club to be set on fire. They're a bunch of fucking cunts. I'm not interested in Essendon. I'm not interested in David King either. He sounds like a fucking moron.
Well, the thing is that they were so completely unrepentant about it.
Yeah. Like,
their supporter base, their board, like, you know, they basically had to be dragged into doing something about it by the AFL.
And they've been complete fucking martyrs about it.
Mm.
As though it was something that was done to them, not something they did to their people.
We're being crucified by trying to game the system by cheating. It's like, well, you probably got off pretty lightly, to be honest.
Yeah.
You know, if you'd been caught a little bit more red-handed, you might have been kicked out of the fucking comp. And that's the problem with sort of not necessarily. I try not to be too critical of sports journalism, as in, I actually think there is more than enough good journalists who could write the sort of stuff that's coming out of the NBA. But I feel that people that pay the bills have no desire for intelligent takes at all. They're just not interested.
They don't see the market for it.
No, and I do actually think the market exists.
I think that's definitely the case. The market exists. I mean,
but and the market is actually underground because there's all those takes are in podcasts and blogs, just not in the mainstream. But yeah,
well, this is why Grantland was so important. It mainstreamized that sort of analysis, blended in with a lot of pop culture nonsense and jokes and all the rest of it, which is also an important part of it, not taking itself too seriously, but bringing your Zach Lowe's and your Bill Barnwell's to a mainstream audience or a mainstream-ish audience was the point, which is why Grantland was important. The problem is that I think Simmons didn't quite figure out that was the important part rather than his shit takes about how great Boston was. And that seems to have been the part that's sustained. And not the intelligent part. But the intelligent part has lived on massively back at ESPN. I mean, I feel like the intelligent analytical NBA writing thing is just has come on leaps and bounds in the last couple of years with True Hoop and Bleacher Report and all these other places.
Bleacher Report, definitely. Like, Bleacher Report basically have a landing place for that style of writing now.
Yahoo with Woj's team, CBS have got people. It's Fox have got people. I mean, the Fox guy is insane. I don't know if you follow Rob Perez on the Twitter, but Worldwide Wob. He is fucking insane. He is ridiculous. He would have fitted in well at Grantland, but more of your Shea Serrano than your Zach Lowe style coverage, I think.
Mm.
Fair to say.
I think the Ringer is slowly starting to turn back more. I think that there's an overcorrection happening there, put it that way. I don't know whether it's just maybe it's a fluke or maybe I'm just picking out the bits that are good more than I was before. You know, I found the people that I like reading again. but it's definitely less than what it was, you know.
Yeah. I'm all right, Doc. The Ringers coverage, most of the Ringers stuff I pay attention to is the NFL coverage because of Robert Mays, but they hire the washed up ex GM called Mike Lombardi, who's just a complete moron, and seem to be giving his shitty takes a lot of airing, and it's, I think they hired him because he was a recognizable name, but he really has no fucking idea, and I think that's really seems. Thing is that I've said that, and then other people have tweeted back to me and say, "Yeah, he's a moron. I can't listen to his takes. I can't listen to the podcast he's on. I can't read the stuff he writes." I saw that there was a piece he wrote that just got tore to shit by Deadspin, saying every one of these points is just bullshit. And also, he was talking about how to draft a good quarterback, and all of his points were basically coded language about pick the white guy, not the black guy. Because all the examples of quarterbacks he didn't like were black, and all the examples of quarterbacks he liked were white guys. You know, gritty, soul to the earth. You know, those sorts of. That sort of coded language, which is
I can see the thinking behind that hire, though, trying to have especially in the NFL, like not so much in basketball, but trying to have someone on the that's been on the inside. But yeah, I don't think they got the hire right.
No.
I guess there's not too many of those guys kicking around. You know, like front office guys tend to want to stay in the front office. It'd be like getting convincing Hinkie to come and write for the Ringer. It's not going to happen. You know, that dude is not interested in that sphere, I don't think.
No, he's got a gig at Sacramento he needs to worry about.
That's right. All right, Doc, let's come back and talk some tunes.
Let's do that. I'm very thirsty.
Me too. See ya.